And now we're going to have part one of the sermon for today. Please could you put the screen on the slide, Kathy? Thank you. There are definitely times in our lives when we are unexpectedly diverted, knocked off course, and the path of our life completely changes. And we have to find an alternative crossing point. Life is unquestionably a journey, and it is always changing, and don't we know it? The first disciples were also on the move with Jesus. He sent them out on mission, and they went everywhere. And during that time, they became the apostles. In our Bible reading, we heard how they were in a boat crossing Lake Galilee with their Lord. They were between two points. So I'm going to ask you, are you at a crossing point today? Are you in a time of transition between departure and arrival? Somewhere in there. Some of us might be crossing from health to relative sickness and sickness to full health. Some of us might be crossing over to a new job or to new responsibilities. Some might be crossing from dependence to independence. The school children and the students are ending 1 year and looking to a new start in September. Some of us, of course, might be crossing the other way, from independence to dependence and requiring additional support. Some of us might be at a crossing point in our relationships. Some of us may be crossing over from activity to rest and from rest to activity. Or it's just some other kind of crossing point that you face today. COVID has brought us all many enforced changes, hasn't it? And we have been through so many crossing points over this last 18 months, it's been hard to keep up. And as you know, tomorrow there is new government guidance coming in, and we find ourselves at another crossing point. And we will need wisdom in the choices that we make. Like those disciples that we just heard about, as a church family, we are all together in the same boat. And best news of all, Jesus is at the helm. And that is the best news of all. So as you cross over, be at rest. In all these changes, what remains important is that we support one another and stay close to Jesus. We do work best as a team. So our compassionate captain of the ship has compassion on us every day. He brings us through. Jesus is, of course, the light in what has been and maybe still is a very dark world. So we're going to lift our souls and hear the band play My Lighthouse. Now, sometimes life does also bring us some very unwelcome changes. And that proverbial rug is pulled out from underneath us and we hit the ground hard. Change can and does bring us loss, separation, suffering, grief, and heartbreak. And sometimes those tears do flow in the dark. They do, don't they? What do we say to God at these times of great change and transition when, frankly, we just do not have the vocabulary for it? Well, thankfully, the Bible provides us with those words, and we have no words of our own. And the Bible gives us the gift of lament. Now, don't get me wrong, it sounds like a sort of present you'd never want to have. But it is a very useful resource when you frankly do not know how to speak, how to pray, how to be. And it is in here, the Old Book Testament of Psalms, that we find very honest words directed to God. Words which are full of regret, disappointment and complaint, anger and fury. And these are heartfelt prayers given to God for help and deliverance. They're not necessarily easy reading, and sometimes it's quite nice to pretend they're not there. But they are, and they're there for a purpose, and I think that purpose might help some of us today. We're now going to listen to one of those Psalms of Lament, and it's going to be read by Keith. And it is Psalm 6.
O Eternal One, don't punish me in your anger, or harshly correct me. Show me grace, Eternal God. I am completely undone. Bring me back together, Eternal One. Mend my shattered bones. My soul is drowning in darkness. How long can you, the Eternal, let things go on like this? Come back, Eternal One, and lead me to your saving light. Rescue me because I know you are truly compassionate. I'm alive for a reason. I can't worship you if I'm dead. If I'm 6 feet under, how can I thank you? I'm exhausted. I cannot even speak, my voice fading as sighs. Every day ends in the same place, lying in bed, covered in tears, my pillow wet with sorrow. My eyes burn, devoured with grief. They grow weak as I constantly watch for my enemies. All who are evil stay away from me because the Eternal hears my voice, listens as I cry. The Eternal God hears my simple prayers. He receives my request. All who seek to destroy me will be humiliated. They will turn away and suddenly crumble in shame. Amen.
Thank you, Keith. Well, that's not comfortable listening, is it? But out of the darkness will come light. We now have got a video to watch. This is one that I mentioned might be possibly a bit too shadowy, but do your best. And it teaches us about the place and the power, the place for and the power of lament. The speaker is Ron Boyd McMillan, who works with the Christian charity Open Doors, which supports persecuted Christians all over the globe. In this film, Ron combines biblical reflections with stories from the persecuted church. And his message demonstrates how light does come out of darkness and hope does come out of despair. Let's watch and have a listen. It is quite long, so it's 40 minutes, so I hope you're comfortable. And it's called Among the Ashes.
What do you do when it all falls apart? What do you do when everything gets taken away? When all that you have worked so hard to build gets shut down, or worse, becomes nothing more than a load of ruins, and a handful of ash. I remember once speaking on the book of Job at a Christian conference. Job is about a man who loses everything. Not, I agree, the most cheery of stories. But what was interesting is that those who came to the talks all had the same sad story. They all felt they had to leave church while they suffered, or had to pretend all was well. A wife was dying of cancer. Has she not been healed yet? A child had died. Are you not over it in the power of Jesus? A son, a hopeless heroin addict, must be hard to realize that bad parenting has played its part. A good church is supposed to carry us through the hard times, not force us to pretend. Yet too often in our Christian world, we don't talk about what goes on among the ashes. We don't talk about what happens when everything burns.
நான் 18 வயசாக இருக்கும்போது ஆண்டவர் என்னோடு கூட ஏசாயா 43:1 நான் உன்னை மீட்டு கொண்டேன், பேர் சொல்லி அழைத்தேன், நீ என்னுடையவன் என்ற வார்த்தையின்படி தேவன் என்னை அழைத்தார். அன்றைக்கு ஆண்டவருடைய ஊழியத்தை செய்வதற்கு நான் அர்ப்பணித்தேன். ஆனால் இருந்தாலும் கூட அந்த
சபையாக
ஒரு சேலஞ்சா
இருக்கும். ரோஹன், I started with personal evangelism and children's ministry. After 7 years, 30 families came to Christ and I started a church.
அதன் பிறகு தான் 2008 அந்த இடத்துல சபையை என்ன பண்ணோம், ஸ்தாபித்தேன். அதன் பிறகு
Friday after the evening prayer at 5 PM, everybody left to go home. Around midnight, I got a call saying the church was on fire. I could not see anything. Everything was burning. I could smell petrol and liquid chemicals. It was all burnt to ashes. God gave and God took away. And now, what will God do? Rohan later found out that his church was set on fire by Hindu extremists who opposed the presence of the Christian faith.
I wonder what Rohan said to God in the ashes of his church. Did he cry out? Did he weep? Was he too numb to say anything? Whatever he said, his experience is not unique. Not just in India, but all around the world, Christians find themselves standing in the ruins and asking, what will God do? Or even, where did God go? And the truth is, we all know those feelings. We may not have encountered the violence that Rohan had to face, but the experience of suddenly having something precious taken away, that's common to all of us. Throughout the Bible, we find people asking the same questions, especially the Psalms. The Psalms are the prayer book of Israel. It seems that ancient Israel believed that the kind of prayer in which we most need fluency is the loud groan, because the majority of Psalms are what we call laments, the poetry of people who cry from the heart with a fearful and searing authenticity. Which is odd, because Psalms are technically called praises. But maybe lament, opening ourselves to God fully and honestly, is beginning to clear the way for praise. In Psalm 6, we get an introduction to the four moves of lament. It starts by reminding yourself who it is you are talking to. The first move of lament is to get into the presence of God. So Psalm 6 starts, Lord, and the name of God is used 8 times in the psalm. Lament always occurs in the presence of God. Of course, it can take courage to enter that presence, especially when we feel betrayed by God, or when we feel life has not been fair, or maybe we feel ashamed of our situation or our feelings, even when it's not our fault. When we've lost a loved one, lost a job, or a business that we've worked so hard at, we feel like we have failed somehow. But it's no shame to be among the ashes. In the world of the psalmist, every experience of life is also an experience of God. And we are creatures that cannot be whole anywhere else but in the presence of God. The second move is to be honest. True lament holds nothing back. It involves crying out in total honesty to God about what is happening. And in Psalm 6, the experience feels like judgment for no good reason. The Psalms are nothing if not honest. They're not polite about God. In various places, they accuse God of abandonment, murder, even falling asleep on the job. It sounds like they're losing their faith. But this, in a strange way, is the most faithful thing they could do. I recall a Christian woman from North Korea. Her husband was shot. Her baby died stillborn. And as she walked out of North Korea, she raged at God. I'm finished with you. I'm finished with you. And then later, after entering China, she said to herself, why do I keep shouting at God? After all, if I'm finished with him, I wouldn't shout at all. And in a flash, she realized that to be silent was to say there was no God to shout at. Whatever my circumstances, even to cry my anger, my questions, my fears, was to admit he was there and I was still his creature. So to voice our doubts is an act of faith, because it's based on the radical and dangerous belief that the God who made the heavens and earth cares how you and I feel. Third, you grab promises. Big ones. God has made promises that he says he will keep to every person on this planet. In Psalm 6, the psalmist appeals to God's covenant loyalty. Covenant is a big word. God made a covenant, a promise to the people of Israel, to give them land, to make them numerous, and to make them a blessing to all the nations. And the psalmist says, we have a deal, Lord. How does what is happening to me show your glory? Come on, Lord. Your reputation is at stake here. When we lament, we've got some history to rehearse. We have our own experience of God. We have the God experience of others around us. And we have the church's experience of God down the ages, centuries of evidence of God's faithfulness to his people. Place your hope in the promises. Claim them. Stand on them. And the final movement of lament is to wait until you get a reply. Not necessarily an explanation, but some kind of reply, because that can change everything. Where has this new hope come from? The external situation doesn't seem to have changed at all, but something has happened. Perhaps for the psalmist, the very act of pouring out his soul has changed things. Or perhaps there has been a voice of comfort, a voice which gives the psalmist hope enough to plan the party. That voice, that reply, will come. And sometimes we are that voice for others, because God uses us to go to the ashes, the gaps, the hurting places, and to pray there, to stay there, to be changed there, to bring God's love and build a new kingdom. A great theologian said, God doesn't send thunderbolts of lightning and judgment and healing. He sends us to the broken places. We become God's thunderbolts to offer hope to a world in pain. That's what happened with Rohan. Open Doors partners helped him and his congregation to rebuild. And it's growing. His congregation has doubled in size. But the ashes will always be there. And they should always be there. In the city of Karakosh, Iraq, there's a recently rebuilt church. When ISIS extremists overran the region in 2014, they set fire to the church and later used it as a shooting gallery. Now, ISIS has been ousted and some of the population has returned, and they've rebuilt the church. Almost. Because they left a part of the church in its burned-out state. They left it as a reminder of their story, of those who had to flee and those who died. A reminder that there may again come a time when Christ's enemies come to town. I'd love to attend a church like that, because a church like that honors the ashes of loss, of grief, of suffering, of persecution. A church like that knows that ashes are nothing to be ashamed of. It knows that ruins will always get rebuilt for one reason only, because Almighty God always keeps his promises.
That, what do we do with it? What do we do with it? What is going to be our individual or collective response? And I hope the next short film, video, music film will help with that.